25 years ago, give or take, don't do the math because there's a tendency to do it and then you would know exactly how old I am, I was assigned my bat mitzvah date, which was Shabbat HaGadol. And I thought to myself, how did I get so lucky? I mean, Shabbat HaGadol, the great Shabbat. I thought everyone must want this Shabbat. Then I learned the reason behind the name. Traditionally, the rabbi did not sermonize every week. The rabbi gave two distinct sermons during the year. One, the Shabbat before Yom Kippur, in which he went on at length describing all the laws concerning fasting and abstaining. And the other, Shabbat HaGadol, the Shabbat before Passover, which is technically next week, but I got permission from Rabbi Wolpe to speak about it this week. The Shabbat before Passover, when the rabbi would speak at length about all the laws concerning how to clean and how to prepare your home for Passover. So Shabbat HaGadol is not great, nor is it the best, as I thought. It's rather a euphemism for long. Well, you can imagine the disappointment I felt in my 13-year-old mind about the truth about this name. Shabbat HaGadol is not even close to the best. So in order to redeem my bat mitzvah parsha and also Shabbat HaGadol, I made two decisions this morning. One, I would definitely not go on at length. And the second, I would uncover what it means to have a great Shabbat. So first, you have to know the origins of Shabbat, which are well known. They're from the book of Genesis. Essentially, God created for 6 days, and on the seventh, God rested. So our mandate is simply to emulate God. Work and create for 6 days and rest on the seventh. But the complicated question is, how in fact does one rest? Abraham Joshua Heschel, which I think every rabbi quotes almost every week, but still I'll say that he's one of the greatest 20th century theologians, said that perfect rest is an art. It is not only to abstain from work, it is to feel a sense of delight. And it is to rise your soul to a place of the sacred. So essentially, and I get questioned this all the time, you can't just take a Shabbos afternoon long nap and call that rest. That's not what the rabbis were talking about. Shabbat must elevate our minds, our bodies, our hearts, our imaginations, different from the week before. A great Shabbat, according to Heschel, is a palace in time. And you have to picture what a palace looks like. It is a moment unlike any other. Yet time is what we need most and what we most lack. The advent of technology was supposed to free our time. Instead, you and I know it has completely stolen it. We are forever reachable now due to BlackBerries, Palm Pilots, faxes, email, even an actual sanctuary like the one we're sitting in right now, a synagogue, is never immune to interruptions. So here's what Judaism wants us to do. Judaism wants us to reclaim our time, to recognize that every hour and every moment that we are here on this earth is entirely precious. Often we feel it after the passing of someone because time feels so fleeting. But Judaism wants us to recognize it every Shabbos. If you think about it, Jewish rituals are entirely focused on time. We pray at specific times of the day, and we can't pray if we miss those times. We light the Shabbos candles at a prescribed time, 18 minutes before sunset, just to clarify. And we shake the lulav and the etrog on a certain time and day of the year. Our holidays, they don't celebrate geography, they celebrate sacred moments in time. Passover commemorates the time we were freed from Egypt. Shavuot recognizes the moment that God stood at Mount Sinai and gave us the Torah. So here's the danger. The danger is that all these rituals and have become entirely routine. We prepare for Passover with such diligence and such monotony that we forget why we prepare. We recite the words of the Seder mechanically after years of repetition. We come to shul every Shabbat morning, and we leave each week unaffected, even though we came. Some of the rituals and the deeds have become so regular that we either deem them mechanical and rote or worthless because they feel obtrusive and awkward. I'm saying this to you because I know it, and I feel it too. Rabbis are not immune. I dread this week, the annual cleaning for Passover. I think of the last possible days and hours of which I can strategize how much I can get done and how I can figure it out. It involves so much preparation that often I feel overwhelmed. And there have been years that I must confess that I have done it reluctantly and without any feeling. And it's not just with Passover. It happens often with Shabbat. Friday, I'm busy preparing to be a rabbi, but I'm also busy preparing to be a wife and a mother, and I'm running around, setting the table, getting the groceries, picking up the challah. By the time dinner comes, I want to collapse at the table. Shabbat is no palace, and it is far from great. But then there are moments that remind me, without a shadow of a doubt, that Shabbat has the possibility to be great, truly great. So I want to tell you one. A few months ago, on a Friday night, we began our Shabbat regular Seder, which is most likely very similar to yours, with the candles and the Kiddush and the Hamotzi. And we have the custom, which is the tradition, to place our hands on each of our children's heads and bless them. And every week since Emmett and Eden have been born, we've been enacting this ritual. And I knew that clearly it had meaning for us, but I had no idea, and I often doubted, that it had any meaning for them. After all, Emmett is 3 and Eden is 1. But on this particular Shabbat Friday night dinner, I invited one of Emmett's teachers, Zoe, to share Shabbat with us. And we began our Seder, and my husband and I blessed Emmett, and then we blessed Eden. And within moments after we finished, Emmett ran, placed his hands on Zoe's head, and began to recite the Shema, followed by the priestly blessing. You can imagine our shock. We had never even heard him recite the words. I wasn't even sure he knew them. And we were all silent as tears gently rolled down Zoe's cheek. I realized in that moment the difference between Shabbat and a great Shabbat. Shabbat is when we perform the rituals as prescribed. A great Shabbat is when we experience the magic or the holiness that emanates from doing them. The rabbis liken Shabbat to a beautiful jewel. Some people can appreciate the cut, the clarity, the color, and the size. But others just see the refraction of mysterious light that radiates from it. And that is why it is so beautiful. As you know, as a rabbi, we have a great vantage point from this bima. And I've seen great Shabbats right here in this sanctuary. When a son surprises his father and slides into the seat next to him before the Torah service. When a granddaughter clasps the hand of her grandmother during the words of the Kaddish. When strangers wrap their arms around each other to sing L'dor V'dor. Each one of you, consciously or unconsciously, is elevating a moment. You and I know that it's impossible to experience that feeling, that greatness, every single week. Frankly, some Shabbatot are pretty much regular. But here's the catch. We can never, ever plan when a Shabbat will go from good to great. But if we don't perform the rituals, we never have a chance of it happening. So maybe the rabbi who spoke so long on Shabbat HaGadol clearly had a plan. Maybe he was outlining in detail all the laws of Passover and what they, how you do them and why you do them, because he's hoping that beneath one of them would lie that unexpected magic. That's the moment that we see God in our homes and in our lives. That is the moment. That's my wish for you today, for every Shabbat, and for this Passover. At some point when you're sitting at the table or sitting around the Seder, there is one moment, unlike any other, that is what you call a palace in time, a place where God dwells, and it is definitely great. I wish you all a Shabbat Shalom and a Chag Sameach.